Well, there you go. DJ Schutz, mahalos for making that transition. And thank you for getting one of our guests to the station in time. I got the other guests in the station on time. We have two members of our Kapaa High School learning community with us on our Out of the Box show. Also, Rick Cooper is in the house. Rick C will be joining us. I'm going to do our underwriter, not our unwriters. We're going to do our wave. Wait a minute. It's an underwriter at this time. Our wave riders are POW. Mahalos for everybody and all of you who helped us get to the $60,000 mark.
Awesome.
That is awesome. You're the reason why we're here. We've got maybe $4,900 to go. So if you're out there, you still want to make a contribution. I heard that Dean's staying late till that $5,000 goal has been met. So give us a call if you'd like, 826-7774, to make your contribution. You can go online at www.kkcr.org. Hit the donate button if you'd like as well. We're taking all pledges still until the cows come home. But before we go there, I got to play this because it's just what we got to do.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
Thank you, Don, for that. And want to say that this out-of-the-box program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the good folks at Kalaheo Chiropractic and Hawaii Gaga.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapaa, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
HawaiiGaga.com, Hawaii Vacation Rental Directory and Vacation Guide. A proud sponsor of Kauai Community Radio, Hawaii Gaga also publishes the Kauai GPS Tour Guide, an audio tour of Kauai for iPhones. More information online at HawaiiGaga.com.
Thank you for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And Rick C., are you there on mic 3?
I'm here in the chair.
And you can hear
Happy
it?
Happy to be back, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
There we go. Tim Kalai is listening from Moloa, I hope. And Rick C., thanks for holding down the fort for the last couple
Absolutely.
Of months.
Thank you very much for letting me guest host for you.
Yeah, well, you know, you were guest hosting for our community. We were talking
on the phone
the other day, and you said, well, I was just keeping your chair warm. And you know what? It's a community space that we make here.
Nice.
And we've talked about it on our fun drive that community radio couldn't happen without community and volunteers. And we're all volunteers in the room at the moment, except for some of us are students. And, well, we do have a professional educator. She's qualified and certified. We have Ritika Kumar. She's on mic, too. I'm going to bring her up. Ritika, go ahead and speak directly in there.
Hi.
Oh, there we go. Wonderful. Junior at Kapaa High School, her science teacher, let me see, did I get the right one? How's it going?
Hi.
And your name is?
Nicole McKamey.
Nicole McKamey, teacher of science at Kapaa High School. How long have you guys known each other?
Since freshman year.
So that would be, for listeners that don't know that you're a junior, that would be
yeah.
a couple, 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And Nicole, how long have you been teaching at Kapaa High School?
I've been teaching for 3 years as a full-time teacher. I had 1 year as a student teacher, and then Ritika was actually in my very first ever honors biology class.
Honors biology. Well, we've invited
nice.
Ritika
wow.
and Nicole to come join us. Dr. Carl Berg from Surfrider is going to join us later on in the program. We're talking about a science project that they've been involved with. It's near and dear to my heart as a beekeeper.
Is it a food thing?
It's not a food
no.
thing.
Okay.
It's a different kind of buzz.
Stomach. Okay.
It's
okay.
another kind of buzz that, well, you know, without the bees, we'd have a hard time having food. So it's one that we're going to be talking about a lot. Also, I think Fred Dente might be joining us later on this first hour, talking about a local Kauai honeybee project that him and some other community partners are involved with.
You know what I like, Jimmy, is that Fred Dente and you and all the people around Kauai have been talking about the bees, and finally now President Obama's got caught up, and now he's talking about the bees, Kauai trendsetting again.
There you go. We're at the forefront of protecting our pollinators. And Rick's referring to the White House recently, I think it was this week, came up with a strategic plan to save the pollinators. And we'll talk a little bit about that. I'm going to take just one real quick musical interlude, because we can, and see how my my choice
we'll be right back.
Music. Let's see if we will be.
Oh, for sure, Jimmy. Think positive. We will be back. We will be back. We will be back.
How's that? We got a double play going on here. I'm going to have to hit this one and then that one. And we'll try to get it going.
Wait a minute. Did that high school girl pick this song or what? Wait a minute now.
I love it when that kind of stuff happens.
Okay. All right. It's not her thing. Okay.
No.
She would have picked rap then, I guess.
No, this is old school.
All right. You know, if you come into the station, we're going to give it to you a little bit.
Do you hear that?
One of the family now.
Do you hear that? There we go.
Totally fine.
Time for some music.
She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. She's an angel of the first degree. Just like honey, baby, from the sea. You can't stop us on the road to freedom. You can't keep us, cause our eyes can see. Men within sight, men in granite. Knights in armor bent on chivalry. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. She's an angel of the first degree.
She's an angel.
She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. Just like honey, baby. She's all right. You can take all the tea and chani. Put it in a big brown bag for me. Sail it right around all these seven oceans. Drop it smack dab in the middle of the deep blue sea, because tea's as sweet as Tupelo, honey. Yes, you can. She's an angel of the first degree. She's an angel. Oh, she's as sweet as Tupelo, honey. Such a line, honey, baby.
There we go, a little Van Morrison and Tupelo Honey, and people are going to call. And Miss Kami, this is McKamey. This is going to be a call-in show. The phone lines are 826-7771. That's to talk to us in the booth, as well as
and on the air.
If you want to talk to an operator who wants to take your pledge, 826-7774. We're still looking for that $5,000 donor, because we can do it. That'll get us to our big goal, $65,000. For you folks that just joined us, we are at the end of our, today's the last day of our fun drive. We had a big goal of $65,000, fell just a wee bit short, so we're going to pick it up. And time to take a deep breath and give thanks for our beautiful radio station and our guests. Nicole and Ritika are joining us this first hour. In the second hour, we're going to be joined with another segment that, Rick C., you want to talk a little bit about Memorial
Yeah, well,
Day buzz?
Yeah, Memorial Day is coming up this weekend, and as a, you know, a different twist on it, you know, there's so many of us, and myself included, who've often regarded Memorial Days as, oh, sweet, 3 days off, that's great, you know, and let's have a barbecue, let's party, let's go, you know. Instead of kind of remembering what it's about, and, you know, I don't think you have to wrap yourself in the flag to appreciate some of what the men and women have done in service to this country, quote unquote. And I think that, so anyway, so we're going to have a veteran or two call in on the second half of the show and talk about some of their experiences, some of what they observed, and we'll talk a little bit about the history of Memorial Day. So stay tuned for that in the second hour here of Out of the Box.
And somewhat related, we will also have Joanna Wheeler, who has been helping to organize a local march against Monsanto.
Nice.
That action is this Saturday from 12 to 2 p.m. That's 12 midday to 2 p.m. in the afternoon at the corner of Kapuli Highway and Ahukini Road, right there at the airport at that entryway. Folks are going to be gathering with signs, probably some drums, some good vibes, and it's just a solidarity action to let folks know that their displeasure with Monsanto is growing.
Well, and all companies who run those pesticides all over the beautiful land, And also, it's a national, it's an international day. That's why they call it a march against Monsanto. And on Kauai, it's going to be basically a gathering against Monsanto.
And as a prelude to that event, there's going to be a planting against Monsanto, and that's going to be happening at a farm that is being operated or managed by the good folks at Ohana o Kauai. They are going to be doing from 10 to noon, they're going to be doing a plant-in. So if you're interested in getting down and dirty and having a little bit of community fellowship in a way to continue to grow that revolution, you guys could join them. That'll be in the the Kealia Farms area, which is just mauka of the highway there at Kealia Beach. So watch for signs there, and we might have a caller from that farm or from Ohana o Kauai calling in to talk about that action as well. But in the booth right now, I've got Ritika. And Ritika, you are, as we mentioned, a junior at Kapaa High School, involved in a science project. Can you tell us a little bit about this project?
Well, basically, in my project, I'm testing honey for glyphosate, and that's like what my main focus is.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you choose a product like honey to be what you wanted to test?
We were just throwing around ideas at our one of our meetings, mm-hmm. about different things that we could do. And I wanted to kind of stay away from testing water samples, because that's what I did last year.
You tested water last year, and what were you looking for? What did you test the water for? Was it turbidity, contamination?
I tested water for atrazine.
Water for atrazine. Wow. And so you're testing honey for
glyphosate.
I mean, a product that we have a hard time pronouncing. Most folks know it as Roundup, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And what made you think that testing in honey would be a good place to find it?
Because Dr. Berg was saying that there was some positive samples that he found, and I wanted to start in a place where we had an idea of where glyphosate might be,
mm-hmm.
instead of testing water where I had no idea if it was contaminated or not,
mm-hmm.
so mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to start with what we already knew.
Mm-hmm. Great, and just following off some previous research that was being done by Surf Rider, looking for contaminants in honey products.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And your project is underway right now as we speak?
It's underway.
How is it going?
It's going pretty good. We're still looking for more samples, so...
What's a sample? What is a sample that you're looking for? If there was a beekeeper listening right now, how would you kind of describe the process?
We're collecting honey, so we're going to give you a vial, and it's 40 milliliters, so we're looking for 40 milliliters of honey samples to be donated. So,
wait a minute. That's a metric. Come on. For us old school folks, what's 40 milliliters?
I was just going to say, what, milliliters?
Is that a teaspoon? Is that a gallon? What is it?
It's about...
A few tablespoons.
Okay, great. All right. Right from the
science.
So
not a whole lot. And you would like that sample in the vial that you give them. They're not just going to come up to you and say, here's my honey, and you can put it in your jar or taste it, see if you could, get any of that stuff on you. This is, I think, kind of an interesting subject for a variety of reasons. Why did you, back to the issue that Carl Berg brought up, why were they looking? Do you know? And what, maybe we should bring Carl into the conversation very shortly about the previous work that Surf Rider's done. But back to some of your decisions to do this. What was driving it for you?
I really wanted to do a science fair project.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been my... It first started as a goal to at least do a project that would be beneficial to the environment, as well as making me be able to go to internationals,
mm-hmm.
which has been my biggest goal for a while now.
And that's a competition that,
yeah,
that you would...
Yeah, a competition.
Mm-hmm. What would it take for you to go to, international?
Solid evidence.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of samples.
A lot of samples.
What is the competition? You've been in one of these science fairs before?
I did my first science fair project when I was in second grade.
Oh, wow. What was that project?
But I didn't know what a science fair was back then, so I did it on the solar system, explaining the planets and everything.
Yeah.
That was my first one.
So I did that in college. You did that in second grade. That's crazy.
See, there you go. That's the difference there.
Kids today.
So advanced.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of grew from there, testing like different things, ideas.
And so in the science fair kind of situation, your last project that you were testing water for atrazine, what did you find and how did you, I guess, provide evidence or demonstrate the results of that test?
We ordered strips from, like, atrazine test strips from, like, online. And when we were testing them, like, each sample would have, like, different results.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we were using the same strip and, like, we're using the same method, we have different results, so our data was, like, inconclusive, the results of our data.
I was just going to say, isn't there a scientific term when you have different data from the same, what do they call that? Inconclusive.
Inconclusive.
Really?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it happens, right? You know, sometimes you do testings, take surveys, look at the data, and it's all different. It's all kapokahi. You don't know what. Was it the way that we tested it? Was there something that we did wrong?
We end up getting more questions than answers.
I mean, that's part of the, I guess, the process of discovery in the scientific method. But can you describe or maybe put me on the spot? What is the scientific method?
The scientific method starts off with a question.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do
background research
to form your hypothesis. And then you gather your materials, have an experimental design about what you're going to test, conduct your experiment, analyze the data and the conclusion, form a conclusion based on the analysis, then you go back and see, like, how you would change your experiment next time.
So. There we go. And so we're right now just looking at the... You haven't submitted any of those. How many samples have you gotten so far?
We have 26 so far.
26 so far.
And to make an accurate, to prove our hypothesis, we need at least 30 or more samples.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm.
How many you've got now?
26.
26, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you're getting a little...
And those samples, are they all from all over the island? Are there any places you need more from or underrepresented areas?
We would love more from the west side.
Okay. How many do we have so far, do we know?
No.
Well, do you analyze them regionally? I mean, so that, you know, exposures, this is west side, this is east side.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. It does.
Well,
we're gonna break it down by Moku and Ahupua'a is kind of the way we're going to break it down in the end. Ideally, it would be great if we could get 20 samples from each Moku.
Uh-huh.
You know, that would be
amazing. And for listeners not familiar with a Moku, that's kind of like our
regional areas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bigger land divisions.
Yeah.
The old Hawaiian land divisions based on water and stuff like that. No, I don't really know too much about it, and that's really one of the great things about the scientific process is we're getting into things that we don't really know much about, but we're learning about as we go. So it's not just about, you know, finding out if there's glyphosate. There's so much extra learning, you know, that goes on with these things.
Sure.
Because you always end up with more questions and you gotta know what you're talking about.
And speaking of what you're talking about, just so the listeners know, that is Nicole who's speaking. She's the science teacher. And then before that was Ritika'a. And so she's, all right, I can't get the Hawaiian thing out. Okay, Ritika.
Come on.
Man, I have to go backwards now. Okay, don't pronounce the second vowel. All right, so Ritika, who's the junior at the high school. Their voices sound similar, but they have both on the same mission. So, Jimmy, do we have Carl going to call in?
Carl Berg will be joining us.
Awesome.
Yeah, very shortly. And also Fred Dente is waiting in the wings as well to talk about their project called the Honey Bees Project. It's a protecting pollinator project locally based. They were, on Yah's show a while back. I say they, the organizers of this homegrown group, explaining a little bit about their background, so we'll let Fred do that some more. Elizabeth Diamond was on Felicia's show sharing her information about what's going on with the bees, and a kind of a call to action, if you will, to folks who might want to come down to the Kapaw Library this Sunday from, I want to say, noon to 2. We'll get more information, clarity on that from Fred, but it is going to be a Sunday at the Kapaw Library, and they will be doing auditions. No, they're done with auditions. They're going to be doing rehearsals for their video program or video shoot for the Honey Bees Project here on Kauai. Rick, we got a phone call now.
Dr. Carl Berg is going to join us.
Got him on line one. Terrific. So let me make sure I get the right button up. Dr. Carl Berg, are you there? Can you hear us, Dr. Carl Berg?
Yes.
All righty. Well, thank you for joining us. Your name came up in regards to the work that you have done with Ritika and coming
listening in.
To the point of how many samples did you do to find out that there was a concern about glyphosate in honey on Kauai?
You want me to answer now? Am I on?
You're on the air. Yeah, you're live streaming worldwide.
Hi, Dr. Berg. Hi.
Hi. Okay, so a year and a half ago, Surfrider got about 8 samples from all around the island and looked for glyphosate and other types of pesticides in the honey that we collected from those hives. What we discovered was that there were no pesticides in the honey, and the main reason for that is that those miscellaneous pesticides attach to the wax or honeycomb. However, glyphosate is water-based and sticks with the honey, and we were able to find in 2 samples that we tested glyphosate levels there. At the same time, we were amazed by an article that came out in Philadelphia concerning a test where they went into the stores and just grabbed organic honey and non-organic honey off the shelves and tested it and found that glyphosate was in over half of the samples, both organic and non-organic, and that there was this test method that we were familiar with, having used it for water testing. And so we decided that it would be good to do a broad-based study of the honey all around the island. And this sort of followed up on Surfrider's study of pesticides in stream water all around the island and the Department of Health study, which showed that pesticides they're found everywhere at different levels of concentration and before rains or after rains. But honey seemed to be a neat tool because it's not washed away, it's accumulated in the hive, and it might then be a sort of like an indicator that we're getting drift coming off of the yards, coming off of the fields, coming off of the playgrounds, wherever glyphosate Roundup is used. And so that's when the students contacted me about a neat project, and Rika said, okay, here we go. Take this one, and Surfrider will help support all the analytical tests and stuff like that, but it's her project, and it's not designed to specifically target the GMO companies or things like that. It's to look at the presence of Roundup all around the island, near organic farms, non-organic farms, city areas, to see how widespread is the use and whether it's going to affect the honey. Now, the important thing here is we eat the honey, so we have concerns about public health, but we also know that glyphosate can affect the bees, and so we're concerned about the beehive health. And the county of Kauai is doing another study looking at the bee wax and the bee pollen, and they're looking at all of the other hundreds of kinds of pesticides that would be attracted to the bee wax.
And so there was a public meeting, I want to say it was in February.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Danielle Downey, the state apiarist, who is kind of the lead investigator or principal investigator for the state and county project, presented information, and I really appreciate that Don Heacock and others were in the group, in the audience, asking about this question, why not test honey, why not test other hive products? The desire to look specifically at honey, how did you guys come up with that idea as opposed to testing wax or larva?
The idea was that the county-funded project that will be run by the state apiarist was going to look at all of the different pesticides and how they would affect the bees. What she didn't know was that the laboratory, the Federal Department of Agriculture laboratory, did not test for glyphosate. And so we saw that this would be a neat place for us to supplement, to join forces with that study to look at all of the different kinds of pesticides, and would pick up the ones that she was not looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And glyphosate is in the honey, whereas of the other pesticides are in the wax. So we looked at the honey, and again, the honey is also important as a human food source. And recent things have shown that glyphosate can bioaccumulate in humans, which hadn't been known before, and also that the World Health Organization has said it's a probable cause of cancer. So it makes us really a very important study, and it's really neat that we have, on this small island like that, we have so many beehives all over the place, and the people are concerned, and so they're willing to let us have a sample in our perfectly clean, non-contaminated vials that we will test, and then we'll provide the results to them.
I know that there was some concerns initially when we found out that the county was willing to fund a study. Some beekeepers at the Beekeepers Association meeting that George Costa from the Office of Economic Development attended, that there was a concern about anonymity. Can you guys talk a little bit about how beekeepers are being, being able to have this tested and be confident that the results aren't going to be, broadcasted all over that, oh my gosh, you have honey that's tainted with Roundup?
This came up, as you said, at the meeting, and it was concern both for the state study and for the student study. And the two groups talked about this. What the study that Rita Ka is doing is we have promised anonymity to the beekeepers that we will not tell anybody except them what the levels of glyphosate are in the honey sample that they gave to us.
And I know that
what we will do is we will identify, we'll have a number of samples from each apwa and put them all together into different moku, and we will then talk about the distribution, the average distribution in those apwa or moku, without identifying, you know, what person or what street or what hive or where it's actually coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that the public should know what level of contamination we have, and I don't know what level of contamination. That's what the study is neat. It's the first time this kind of study's been done. But we don't want to jeopardize any beekeeper by saying, oh, your honey is totally contaminated, you know, you can't do anything with it. We'll give the person the results, and it's up to him to then either broadcast the fact that, oh, I have glyphosate in my honey, or he can broadcast the fact that my honey was tested, and there was absolutely nothing in it, and so I have good, pure, organic honey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hey, Jimmy, speaking of broadcasting it, I just had a woman call in, and she wanted to offer her honey for testing, and she didn't want to go on the air, but I took her information, so if other people would like to offer their honey for testing, you can call us right now, 826-7771, and I'll take your information, and I'll pass it along.
Mahalo's, Rick, for that.
Absolutely.
That was definitely one of the things that we were hoping with this radio show, as well as trying to get some more information out as to how people can participate. You want to have an ultimate goal of how many samples?
At least between 30 to 40.
30 to 40. So we've got 26 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd like to get them done by the end of May, June, July?
In the next 4 to 6 weeks.
4 to 6 weeks. So safely to say by the end of June,
mm-hmm.
you'd like to have 13 more samples.
Yeah.
From around the area. You're looking for West Side beekeepers a lot because we don't have too many from there.
Yeah.
Are there any areas where we have plenty results from? Do you feel like we've got enough from Wailua or enough from Molawa'a or Hanamalu? Any places that are well represented, or are you just going to take as many as you can get?
Take as many as we can.
Terrific.
It seems pretty even for
mm-hmm.
now. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, the if folks aren't by their phone or can't get in touch with you, what's the best way for folks to, are they contacting either you or Dr. Berg, Ritika?
They could contact me at kumar.ritika@gmail.com.
Right on. We'll write that one down and
give us
get
that once again.
Again.
Give us it once again.
kumar.ritika@gmail.com.
Right on. Just like your name, Ritika Kumar.
Except backwards. You notice it was backwards. Kumar. Dot, I think. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think, let me get a mirror and we'll take a look. Let's see what we come up with.
That's there awesome. We go. And if you are wanting to ask questions of Dr. Berg or Ritika, please give us a call at 826-7771. We are talking about a pesticide survey that is looking at honey samples from local beekeepers to find out if there are contaminants or traces of glyphosate. That's what you guys specifically are looking for. And the if you will, sample that the county and Danielle Downey from the Department of Ag, they're looking at the other aspects. They're going to sample, I think, pollen
mm-hmm.
from hives and then run that to a different. Where do you send this these specimen bottles? Where are these vials going to go once they leave your hand? Where are they off to?
Yeah, I know.
The samples that we're getting in our acid clean, perfectly non-contaminated vials, we will take to a environmental laboratory in Honolulu that where Surf Rider has set up equipment to do the ELISA testing for glyphosate and other pesticides. But, and in this case, one of our Oahu Surf Rider members, who is a analytical chemist, will be running the samples, and we intend that Ritika will be there also to help out and see how the process is done. So this will all be done in-house, and part of that is we want as few people as possible handling these samples so that we know there's no mix-up in samples, there's no cross-contamination, or no samples are lost. So we'll give a bottle to the beekeeper. The beekeeper gets the honey, and then the beekeeper gives that bottle with the sign-off form, gives that directly to Ritika, and she then holds on to them until such time that we do all the analysis in Honolulu. Again, this is all kept confidential. Only Ritika and myself will know the identity of the different ones, and the data will all be put together on the APWAS or MOKU basis. We hope if once we run these samples, if we find some values that are very high, then we'll ship them off to either a German lab or a mainland lab for much finer detailed analysis of the levels in that honey. So, but we can't afford to do all 40 samples at that cost. The cost is around maybe $200 a sample to send them off. It costs us about $25 a sample to have them done by our laboratory with our own equipment. Now, but we really hope, with all science, the more data you get, the better it represents what's really going on in the real world. So we're trying to get as many samples as we can, and at the same time, we're trying to start processing these things right away so we can go on to the next level of looking more in-depth at and confirming those that have high concentrations. So if anybody is out there and is willing to get a sample to us in our bottles, contact kumar.rivika@gmail.com, and we will make sure you get a bottle, and we'll do the analysis for free for you, and we'll let you know the results.
So I've got a question, because I know that the state is, looking at the money that the county made available, $12,000 will pay for approximately 27 of these samples at $400 a pop. How expensive is this? Each of you guys are getting 30 samples. That's going to be a fair amount of hard right. cash that somebody's got to come up with.
So what we're doing, what Surfrider is doing with the student, is we're supporting her testing using this ELISA antigen response method, and which is not as expensive. And that's going to be our initial screening to see if it's worthwhile or not to go off and have them analyzed at the much more expensive $200 to $300 a shot laboratory. The county study is just going to send them off directly to the federal U.S. Department of Agriculture lab, which we've also used, and they're going to look for about 175 different pesticides in one go, and that's why it's so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're using much higher resolution techniques, and they're looking for so many more different kinds of pesticides. I should add that glyphosate is a new pesticide newly being tested, and it itself is as expensive to test for just glyphosate as it is the other 200 samples of other pesticide samples. So we felt that we couldn't afford 30 samples at $300 each. So instead, we'll do this initial screening, and then those that are of greatest concern, we'll have just those few done. And this is all being, the testing stuff is all being done by her as a science fair project, and Surfrider, who has concerns about the environment, is supporting the analytical costs. And if anybody out there would like to help support this kind of research, they can make a donation to Surfrider and just say for Honey Project.
Well, there you go. Thanks so much, Dr. Berg, for that. Thank you, Surfrider folks, for putting your money where your mouth is. That is one of the things that beekeepers often talk about, is like, wow, it'd be great to sample or test this, but when it comes to the number of zeros behind that two or three, it's like, wow, I can't really afford to do a whole lot of that. So that is one that's greatly appreciated by many in the beekeeping community. Dr. Berg, any last comments or thoughts that you'd like to share before we make the phone line available for other folks at 826-7771?
No, I think this is a great science fair project, and Surfrider is a environmental organization that is about conservation, activism, research, and education. And so we have a number of projects supporting our high school kids, our college kids in the state, because we're the ones who feel that they have to take over from us. We have to develop this environmental awareness, and our mission is mainly ocean-oriented, but beach cleanups, water testing, and things like that. But it's also really education, and so I really appreciate everything you're doing, Jimmy, and what the radio station is doing to help protect the environment and help with the education of the kids on this island.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Carl Berg. Aloha, and thanks for joining us. Big mahalos for Ritika for the work that you've engaged with. Rick's waving his hands. Got something?
Yeah, just before we let Carl go,
he's gone.
We've had he's gone. Okay, thank you, Carl. Appreciate that. Maybe someone else has the answer to this. I'm getting some questions mm-hmm. called in, and someone asked, is glyphosate a pesticide?
No, glyphosate is a herbicide.
Okay.
And Ritika and I were having this conversation. It is a pesticide in that the general term pesticide covers all of those chemical agents that are used in the killing of different life forms. So herbicides, fungicides are all pesticides.
All right, now, so I'm hearing a difference here. Let's have a pesticide off here.
You're hearing the same thing. It's an herbicide.
Ritika, you concur?
Pesticide's like a broader term.
Okay.
So
there we go.
Herbicide's more.
All right,
specific.
You were like focusing in, and he's talking. We got it. We got it covered here. And another caller asked the question of whether the community is going to have, if you get labeling, whether there will be labeling for honey about carcinogens, and if that's an effort that people are making about whether if there is carcinogens or you know,
right? Well, I think there's a state law in California that says if there's a carcinogenic agent in that product, whether it's a food product or not, you have to list it.
Yeah, labeling seems to be an issue. We've got another call coming in, and Jeff Morris called us a minute ago, and maybe this is him now.
Right on. So we got somebody on hold, or we got...
Should I?
Go ahead, talk.
McKamey here, the teacher. This is a classic example of, you know, ethics and science, and how, you know, that in science we often find things out, right? And what we do with that information is what we do with it from there. It's a good question, you know, and it's probably a legal issue and a political issue and a health issue, and I guess we'll have to see what the results come up with and then take it from there.
There we go. I think we have a phone call. Caller, are you there still? Did we got you? No more. Go ahead. Go ahead. Put them on. We're on. We're ready. Uh-oh. How about now?
I'm a retired beekeeper from Washington State and Oregon and also California. And I also raised bees in Oahu. So this poison they put out, it looks exactly like a pollen. The bees gather it up and they bring it back to the hive. So my other point is, these meters, the smart meters they have, they operate at the same frequency that the bees could communicate with.
And so that's the concern that folks have with smart meters, is the frequency can jam up.
Same frequency.
Sure.
It's a proven fact. You know, without bees, without honeybees, we're all going to die, you know?
Well, we're all going to die anyway, but it just might be quicker.
I learned so much on this show.
But anyway, more power to anybody that's going to, you know, the police, I live in Kilauea, and I just went to the police department meeting, you know, where they're doing their big talk, and they get $30 million, okay? I just tap into that police budget. And these tests are very important because bee pollen, I used to sell Spanish and Chinese pollen and broiled jelly and everything like that. Bee pollen does not lie. So you do the test on bee pollen, you're going to see what's in there.
Well, there you go. That'll be the state program.
No, litmus test. But, you know, you should test all of them. Get some of that $30 million to they're adding 13 more police. You know, we're fine with the police.
We got enough police already. We need more testers.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Well, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate
you. Love you guys.
Love you. Aloha. Yeah. And we're gonna go to line two, I think, right here. Wait a second. I get you. Are you there? Oh man. Line two, I might have blown. How about now? I blew it. Call back if you can. My fat fingers hit the wrong button. My phone guy stepped away, and guess what happens? You do that. Here we go. Aloha caller, you're back on the air.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for pulling over and waiting for us.
Oh, this is Fred. Yeah.
Freddie. Oh, you jumped in ahead of the guy that was in front of you. But tell us what you got, Freddie.
Well, yeah, two things. One thing is, I'm a veteran for peace, and I wanted to talk, you know, during the part of the program about Memorial Day.
Okay, well, you'll call back for that one.
I'll call back later, but I wanted to talk about the bees, and I want to thank you, Jimmy, for being a focal point for the bee community here on this island. We went to the my friend Elizabeth Diamond and myself went to the meeting last night, the KB meeting, and that was really very inspirational. And to see that, you know, people are coming together to protect the bees and protect Mother Nature. And so anyway, I'm not a scientist, and neither is Elizabeth, and we're more in the entertainment area and music and such. And so I wanted to do something. We wanted to do something to help the bees. And 2 years ago, we started a project help educate and help educate people, help reduce the ignorance about what people don't know about the bees. A lot of people are afraid of bees, and they kill bees because they think they're a pest. And so there's part of the problem right there. And besides, you know, all just the systemic pesticides and all these other things. So I really have a lot of admiration for you and for the Tika, for Dr. Berg, and all the people that are involved in the scientific part of this and trying to convince people and educate everybody that we've got to stop the poisoning of the bees. So we decided the best thing we could do was to try to raise a global consciousness by making a music video. And we created a song, and we've been working on it for 2 years now, and we got the song done quite a while ago. And we've got some local high school girls, teenage girls here that are our featured performers that are doing a fabulous job. Alexi Warnock and Olivia Geegan, Pat Geegan's daughter. And they're our featured performers in our song. And we're shooting a music video on the 31st of May in Kilauea. And we're having our last rehearsal this coming Sunday. And it's at the Kapa'a Neighborhood Center, not the library, as you'd mentioned, Jimmy. It's at the Kapa'a Neighborhood Center from noon to 2.
Thank you, Fred.
Yeah. And it's kind of the last call for people who want to be in a music video. We need singers and dancers and drummers, tribal drumming, hand drumming at the end. People would need to, if they want to be in the first part of it, they would need to memorize some song lyrics to our song. And I think you have a copy of the song. I don't know if you're going to play it today, but
we were going to play it there.
People can hear it.
We'll do it right at the top of the hour when we do our underwriting and all that good stuff.
That'd be fabulous. Thank you so much. And so people would need to memorize some of that from the third verse on, and then learn some dance steps. And this, I think people, if they want to do that, they can come this Sunday, noon to 2, by the Neighborhood Center, and get in on the fun. And if they can't do that, and if they want to still be part, that they could, if they're drummers, we're going to have a big tribal drumming shot at the end, which will be live recording. So I'm going to be doing the engineering on that. But the whole idea is to create a YouTube music video that is hopefully up to the standards of the song that we created. And I think it will be, because we had a really great the first rehearsal was fantastic. The energy was really high. People were totally joyous. It was really inspirational for Elizabeth and I to hear a room full of people singing our song, which, you know, heretofore was sung in the recording studio and by a couple of people, but here in a whole room full of people, it was great.
Hey, Fred. So as Rick, hey, listen, a couple things I wanted to ask is, I understand that that your song has Malama Aina. It's a really respectful of the land, respectful of the culture, and with that, are you asking for all types of people, all ethnic groups to come and join this, and of course welcoming people who were born and raised here? Is that the case?
Well, absolutely. Thanks for asking, Rick. We'd love to have as many Hawaiians and local people and people of color, all, you know, people of all stripes to be part of it. But, you know, we're representing Kauai here, so it'd be nice to have some folks who are Hawaiians. We have a Hawaiian young girl that's man, she's really something. But we need more folks of all different types.
You
know,
need
type
folks.
Of people.
That's what you're looking for. You need folks.
And I understood it was eight years and older or welcome. Is that right?
Yeah. That's kind of a general thing we're going for. Yeah, 8 years
and up. So families can come, right?
Well, yeah, as long as everyone's performing. We're having a closed set. It's going to be a closed set, and we're going to be shooting from, actually 8 o'clock in the morning until 3 p.m. And we have a really great, great cinematographer, director of photography named Joel Guy.
Yes, you're fortunate.
People probably know him.
Yeah, he's
on
awesome.
The island here. And so he's going to be shooting you know, some spectacular footage, and we've got a great dance, and everybody's going to look very colorful. It's going to be a celebration of the bees.
So, Fred, if folks want to get in touch with you or Elizabeth or find out more, where do they go? How do they find out about this project?
Okay. Thank you. Well, I'll give you a phone number, Elizabeth Diamond, 823-6293. She's our director and our executive producer. And people can go to our website and hear the song and see our mission statement and see what we're up to.
And the website is?
www.bebuzz, with three Z's, BEEBUZZZ.org.
There you go.
And the other thing, I just want to get this in there, Fred, if I understand you correctly, you are posting this on YouTube. And so anybody that's in it's going to, you know, have their performance on YouTube. And sounds like it'll be a really fun experience for people to have, anybody who wants to be in a music video. And I think it's a great project, and I encourage people to get involved in another way to raise consciousness about the bees.
Yeah, and as one other real quick thing, if I could.
Yeah, we're top of the hour, so real quick.
Okay, real quick. I'm just reading a report from the university, Simon Fraser University in British Columbia, and they did a bunch of testing, and they had an unlimited budget to test, so they weren't just testing for the glyphosate; they were testing for all particular residues. They found over 120 different pesticides in the beehives there. That's just phenomenal. That's, you know, household things and golf course things. And
and unfortunately, and this is one of the reasons why bees are having a problem that they are, is that a lot of beekeepers use fungicides, miticides in their own hives to take care of some of the problems that are going on in their own hives. So we're learning. We're all students in the game of life. So, if we can pay attention and be aware, We'll get there. Fred Dente, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck this Sunday and then also next week with the filming of the what could be a viral video.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the buzz is happening already, and then all we got to do is do our job and have a good, and everybody pray for a good sunny day on May 31st so it's not raining. We wanted to have that blue sky, and and we'll just do it. We're really dedicated to this, and everybody, it's got a good vibration and a good karma going.
Contact information real quick, and that's it. You're out.
Beg pardon?
Your contact information one more time, please.
Yeah, 823-6293, and that would be Elizabeth, and www.ebuzz.org.
Thank you very much, Fred.
Aloha. Thank you, Fred. Aloha. And you are listening to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. That's 90.9 FM Hanalei, 91.9 island-wide, and 92.7 in the Anahola Molawa'a area on the island of Oahu, and the gathering place at 104.7 FM and on the cable dial 95.1. If you are listening worldwide, and some of you are, at www.kkcr.org. We do have one more phone call coming on, waiting. Somebody's on. Go ahead.
Go.
Yeah, he's been waiting patiently. Can we get him on? Oh, I hope we got you. How's this? Did we make the transfer? You there? Anybody home?
He's on air.
There we go. On air. Live.
Hey, guys.
Hey, squeezing you in. Is this Jeff?
Yeah, you got me on?
Yeah, we got you on. You're live, listening audience. Thank
live
you.
Live without a net, the GMO Reaper, 808 Kauai style, baby. How you guys doing today? Aloha.
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 Go ahead, Jeff.
I didn't want to change the subject too much. I did want to congratulate our new scientist and future scientist on her work, and wish her luck
Thank
on
you.
Her efforts with the bee pollen.
She's
that rocks, and we need more youth like that, because the youth are our future. On a similar note, I did want to encourage the whole island and everyone island-wide, please show up for the March Against Monsanto. I see you folks on the side of the road. You give me so much support, and it means so much to me. I'd really love it if you guys could make it out, do a sign up, see you guys there at noon, and support the March Against Monsanto. It's a worldwide effort. And, I've been out there on Oahu and the Big Island the last couple months, and I've gotten numerous phone calls and Facebook friendships. A lot of people are getting on this movement, and I think, that the fire is still lit, and I'm trying to keep it lit, so I would encourage everybody to show up. And maybe one more note, I didn't see anything in the paper today, but read on Civil Beat that Pioneer Parent Seed Company is consolidating with Oahu facility, and they're going to be leaving Kekaha Kauai. So can we all get a big aloha to Pioneer Seed?
Well, there you go. Aloha Pioneer Seed. It's been wonderful all these years. You've been providing employment on the west side, and hopefully there'll be alternatives to that. It won't be such a hardship and economic for the people on the west side. But for folks that really don't want to see seed companies testing pesticides on the west side, that's welcome news for many folks.
One down, plenty more to go, guys.
Yeah.
One down.
And maybe because of your scary face, out there on the west side every now and then, you might have had something to do with that. I don't know.
He's qualified to work
that.
In radio then.
Speculation only. So, Jeff, once again, Saturday is when and where?
It's going to be at the airport light, right at the sign of the airport, the Welcome to Kauai, Aloha and Welcome to Kauai sign there. From,
what time?
12 to 2.
So, mahalos, I really appreciate you taking time on the busy commute, getting back to work, and thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box. I think Joanna Wheeler is going to be joining us shortly after the top of the hour as well.
See you guys on Saturday. Thanks for all that you do.
Thank you, Jeff.
Aloha.
So, I will play my underwriters. Those are the good folks that make this show possible, Hawaii Life and Tahiti Nui and Kaz's Welding. They will help this show continue to do what this show does.
Nice. Thank them. Yeah.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kaz's Welding, island-wide mobile welding service. Home and commercial fabrication, auto and truck repairs, whatever needs welding. You can call Kaz at 346-9805 for more information or to hire his mobile welding services. Kaz's Welding proudly supports KKCR.
There we go. Mahalos for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I also want to just acknowledge and say mahalo to our food providers during our fun drive, the folks at Pauhana Pizza, Healthy Hut, Monikos, Coconut Cup, North Shore Grinds, Papayas, Barracuda, the Greenery Cafe, Al Pastor Tacos, and Harvest Market. Mahalo Nui Loa for feeding the volunteers, the professionals, and everybody else that enjoyed the kind grinds while we were raising $60,000. We're $4,900 short. If you happen to have some spare change, feel free to give us a call, 826-7774. We want your money. We do. We love you. We love your support. And any more that we can get, we'll take it. So thank you for that. We have our second caller on. Are we there? Ready to go, Rick?
Yes.
Good to go. Here we go. Aloha. Is this Joanna?
Aloha. How are you doing?
We're doing well, Joanna. Thank you for joining us and for your work in organizing Saturday's March Against Monsanto.
Thank you. Thank you so much for telling Kauai about it.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate your support, and thank you for what you do for the community.
Well, and I understand that there's a prelude to that event, that there's a plant against Monsanto that's starting at 10 and ending at noon, 10
Correct.
To 12 in Kealia at the Kealia Farm. So folks who want to get really down and dirty, they get opportunities all day long to show their support for Aloha Aina and for growing fresh, clean, chemical-free food.
Absolutely, that's right. It's a wonderful event, and it's not only Kauai, it's happening all over the world. Basically, every country on the planet is participating, and people are showing that they're over it, that they want to take back their food. And we're doing this in solidarity. We're having the sign waving. It's just a beautiful thing to see how people all over the world are getting connected in this aspect.
So let's talk about the international flavor of this. You're a global citizen. You have relatives in other countries. What is it like in other places that you visited? What is this movement to rid the planet, if you will, of harmful chemicals?
It's huge, and it's a beautiful thing to see that this March Against Monsanto, it has become a tool for people from all over the world to be united and to learn more about how these companies who operate. I'm in touch with many people from Latin America and one of the organizers of marches in Peru as well, from here. What the common denominator is that this company is not only Monsanto, it's also the other companies present here, Syngenta. In that case, they have also Bayer, BASF, DuPont Pioneer. They all have the common denominator, which is essentially to break the law. If there is a law that is banning them, like in the case of Peru, they are banned from there from bringing their seeds, they are trying in every aspect to break the law, to lobby, to introduce people who are friendly to their practices in the government. And right now they are trying very strongly to break the law by trying to, they have been found bringing GMO foods, GMO seeds, corn seeds specifically. And it's a big problem. Right now, the march in Peru is going to be about demanding that they respect the law and that they actually, they also want a glyphosate ban because they are finding thousands of doctors in Latin America are very concerned about glyphosate and the effects that it's causing in children's health.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike here where there is all this concern. People here ask for dialogue, and people. Yes, I have my little daughter right here.
No worries.
I'm so involved. Yeah, honey, baby. Sorry for that. I'm sorry for that.
Oh, no worries. It's not dead air space when we can hear kids in the background.
Oh, thank you. You know, that's the number one reason I'm a mother. I really want my daughter to have a safe place for her to grow up, you know, because it's there everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Where you look, these companies are setting food and bringing their poisons. It's really important for all of us to be united and informed. But anyway, I was telling you in Peru, they're breaking the law. They're trying to purposely contaminate the Peruvian royal Inca corn, which is being a valuable asset since the Inca times. They do not have GMO. They don't need it. They do breeding, and they have a fantastic kind of organic corn.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been found, these companies have been found bringing these illegal seeds into the country, just like what Syngenta has been doing in other places in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that this wasn't just about the chemicals. I said something about ridding chemicals from the planet, yet we all know that life wouldn't exist without chemicals and that there are some very essential chemicals out there. But this is more than just pesticides. It's more than just GMOs, isn't it?
Well, it's also about it's the GMO process. What the problem is people say, oh, what if GMOs? They focus on the supposed advantages. For example, they say they are able to produce more food with GMO. The truth of the matter is that that's not quite true. That there is a fabulous report called Failure to Yield. You can find it online, and it's really phenomenal. And really, they're not producing more food. What they want to do, what they're creating with these GMOs, they are manipulating the plant so they actually can be a pesticide resistant. The problem is that the plants adapt to their pesticides, and then the weeds start growing again, so they have to develop new and more toxic poisons to combat a new kind of super weed. That's what they call them, super weeds. So it's a really bad kind of model, because they are just, if you look at what's happening in Argentina and in Bogota, doctors, again, that's what I was talking about. Yeah, doctors are talking about what they are seeing, the birth defects growing each year in regions where these pesticides are present. So unlike here, where they ask us for what they say in the States is correlation is no causation, in those areas they are more prone to err on the side of caution. There is simply too much going on, and basically they're linking all these health problems to pesticides.
Mm-hmm. And we also know that the level of influence that these corporations, that this industry has in the foods, if you will, food systems, is phenomenal. We had an example of that here on Kauai with a recent event. Yesterday you attended some of the what was the conference? It was the Hawaii State Association of Counties was hosting an interregional get-together.
Correct. So it was a NACOS, basically this is an organization of county councils.
National Association of County Organizations,
yes,
right?
Yes, and it was a western region. So it was all the western states and the Hawaiian islands, and this year Kauai is hosting. And so I learned about it very recently, so I decided to go and check it out. And there was something that caught my attention. This is all supposed to be, here I have the material. The intention is good, right? It's to bring all these counties and talk about common problems and how to solve them. It's about water issues, that draw that's taking place in California, how to deal with drug problems in the communities, and how to really learn about this and solutions and think about possible solutions. One of the problems that I found is that one of the sponsors is one of the people who are suing us, which is DuPont Pioneer. And the HCIA is present. There's basically, there was a particular event I went to that took place yesterday, and essentially, to give you, it was 2 hours of GMO pitching. Here you have the county people of all these western regions, and there were three main speakers. And one was Kirby Kester. You know who Kirby Kester is? Remember?
Sure.
Him?
Kirby Kester was the BASF plant manager. He's also the president of the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association, and now is the Monsanto director on Molokai, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. So this guy was like the head speaker, right?
They picked the right guy.
Exactly. So you might imagine what he's saying about the wonders of GMO and how fantastic it is. And I think it's incredible. They are suing us. We are seeing the results of their pesticide testing field experiments in the island and all over the world. Really, what their products are causing is nothing wonderful but health problems all over the place. And then the second speaker was very concerning for me as well. His name is Doug Bradenthal. He is the commissioner of Jackson County in Oregon. What's interesting about this county is that they also passed an ordinance to be able to ban GMOs.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have the commissioner, which essentially was talking about how to prevent this kind of ordinance from happening by educating people in advance. Essentially, the way that he was making sound is that you have to educate people so they do not want to... Okay, baby. Okay.
Well, there you go. We have a number of education-related issues going on. Joanna, thank you for sharing that.
The last thing I want to say...
Please.
So sorry for that.
No
the
worries.
The last thing I want to say is that the third speaker was somebody from the USDA. And again, the USDA, who is supposed to be an impartial party, was pitching GMO like there is no tomorrow. So he was saying GMOs are here to stay. Then he said, yeah, that there is a lot of demand for organics, and of course he was saying that they could coexist, but there is no way they cannot coexist, as we all know. So it was really saddening and very concerning to see how these organizations, the HCIA and the GMO companies, have figured out after what happened in Maui and in Oregon and in Kauai, that now they want to infiltrate the last bastion of resistance of American people to be able to protect themselves from GMO. So we really need to be alert.
Well, there we go. We really need to be alert. Joanna, you want to talk about Saturday really quickly, the what and where again?
Yes, absolutely. So please come by. It's from 12 to 2 o'clock. It's going to be in the corner of Ahukini and Highway 51. It's a very, very important event. Please come, bring water, bring, a hat, whatnot, and bring your family and friends. It's about being part of the big world community who are standing up to biotech and to their lose-lose proposition. It's about taking back our food. It's about taking back our rights and our dignity. And basically standing up for what we feel is right, our kids with a happy, healthy future.
There we go. Mahalo Nui for putting that out there. Thank you for calling in. And
Mahalo, thank you very much.
Hope to see you on Saturday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Aloha. So we're going to do a real quick council update and then shift gears and talk a little bit about Memorial Day coming up. And then we'll be back, talk story with Ritika and Nicole if time allows. I know you've got a patient youngster waiting at the athletic field in Princeville. So let's go and listen to John Gordon for a couple seconds here. Well, that's dead air. Let's see. Well, maybe if I hit this button.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of May 19th. There will be a council meeting this week at 9 a.m. on Tuesday in the council chambers in the historic county building in Lihue. Note, this meeting is on Tuesday, not the usual Wednesday. Here's some highlights from the agenda. The mayor transmits for council consideration the cost items for the Hawaii Government Employees Association bargaining units 2, 3, and 4 between July 1, 2015 and June 30, 2017, as well as unit 14 cost. This is proposed draft bill number 2588 and is also under bills for the first reading at this meeting. This item was deferred from May 6th. The county attorney requests authorization to spend additional funds up to a total of $322,194 for special counsel's final billing for services related to the Tim Bynum cases. The executive on transportation requests council approval to receive and spend a Federal Transit Administration grant in the amount of $1,040,000 for various operational expenses for the county transportation agency. The prosecuting attorney requests approval to receive and spend $37,214 in state funds for the Kauai Victim Witness Assistance Program. Councilmember Yuka Murr requests council reconsideration of the minutes of the February 6, 2015 facilitated Shared Priorities Workshop. This was approved on May 6th. The Housing Director recommends council approval of an agreement granting Community Planning and Engineering Incorporated access to the Kauai parcel, formerly referred to as the Kukui'ula Workforce Housing Parcel, to undertake pre-development site work for the premises. There will be a non-public executive session primarily to allow the county attorney to brief the council on the Tim Bynum case and various related matters. If the council is not finished with this meeting by approximately 1:30 p.m., it will recess for public hearings on Bill number 2587 for an ordinance amending the county code relating to homestays. For more information, visit the county's website at www.kauai.gov. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.
Mahalo, John Gordon, for that. And we do have another phone call. We're going to shift gears, talk a little bit about Memorial Day weekend coming on up. On air is Stefan. Stefan, are you there?
I am here.
Terrific, Stefan.
Stefan, and welcome to KKCR and Out of the Box.
Aloha to you too, brother.
Hey, thank you so much. There we go. Yeah. I wanted to let callers know that you are a veteran. You're a Vietnam-era veteran, and you live on Maui. How many years have you been on Maui there?
I've only been here about a year and a half this time. Mm-hmm. I actually lived here 38 years ago for a year and went to the mainland to tend to my mother who was dying, and it took me 38 years to get back.
Well, welcome home, in more ways than one, of course.
Thank you.
There's a lot of information we want to get to in this half an hour. So if you could just give us a very brief summary of what is the history? How did Memorial Day start?
Oh, my.
We talked about it a little bit last night. You know, we talked about some of the protests going on and after the World War I veterans were protesting. Tell us just a little bit, if you could give a little slice of the pie.
Actually, that was in reference to Veterans Day.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
But I can pull this up real quick. I don't have that information rather than tip.
Well, let's then talk about you. Okay.
No. It's fine. I can pull it up real quick here. I'm a little more. We were talking about the difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day.
Exactly.
And, you know, Memorial Day is really based on the idea of memory, of memorializing, you know, remembering vets. So all vets, but most particularly those who've died.
Well, also, I think it's not them per se so much. In addition to them, let's say. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know any veterans personally who have died. I'm fortunate in that way, I suppose. Uh-huh. And yet, I can certainly think about
what all of those men and women have done,
mm-hmm.
and what they were subjected to, and
yeah.
and all the sacrifices that they made. So in my memory, you know, instead of my, you know, having a barbecue and hanging out with some friends for the three-day weekend, I want to include a little bit of that. I think it's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, according to my information here, Memorial Day actually began back after during the Civil War, when soldiers' graves were decorated both before and during the Civil War, and it was officially instituted by after Abraham Lincoln's assassination. Looks like 1865 was the first May 1st, 1865 was the first observation. Memorial Day observation.
All right, so let's talk, now that we're talking years, your service was 1966 to
1979. No, 66 to 69.
Sorry if I didn't say that, 66 to 69. Then you were 1968 to 1969, you were in country in Vietnam.
Correct.
A little bit about your service. So just give out a minute or so, and then I want to get into some of your overviews. You've had some interesting observations and have been in an interesting place to see what exactly some of the experiences and some of the trauma and the difficulties that veterans have had. And I think some of us, many of us, don't really have much of an idea.
Oh, my. Okay, so I took combat medic training, then had the good fortune to become a social work clinical psychology specialist. I spent 11 months at Fort Riley, Kansas. I went to Vietnam, spent 14 months in Vietnam doing psychological services for the ended up in I Corps and with the 101st Airborne in the northernmost part of Vietnam, Quang Tri, Phu Bai, Dong Ha, and the whole idea being basically that anyone getting eliminated from the service had to have a psychiatric evaluation, and I did the social history in the first part of that. I came home and I ended up working in psychiatric units for 17 years and went back to school and beginning in 1990 and ended up with a PhD in 2006.
What qualified you to work in psychiatry in the field in country in Vietnam?
Well, I had enough experience in the States before I went over. Nothing prepares you for it. I was qualified because I had the job when I came over. I had the experience. It was on the records that I deserved to do that.
Yes.
And I had really good trainers, but nothing really prepares you for the kind of work that you end up doing.
Now I want to make sure that the listeners are extrapolating what you're saying and what we're asking to the degree that you haven't experienced certain years in Vietnam, a certain type of conflict. But callers, I ask you to extrapolate to other wars that we've had pre and post Vietnam, and the experiences, I believe, and you can differentiate if you feel necessary, Stefan. But I'm imagining as a layperson, as a non-military person, that a lot of the experiences were probably the same. So, and that's what I want to get into, so that we can try to understand. You know, besides the people who have passed away, whom were killed in action, who didn't return, what have some of it's been the impact on our living of brothers and sisters who've served in the military. So let's hone in a little bit first on, tell me about some of your overview looking at the psychiatric, if that's the right word, health of fellow soldiers in Vietnam. What did you notice? What was it like?
Wow, that's a really large question, and I can only say that my experience is, and I've done a lot of research on this. I've actually written two books. I wrote a novel about my experience of being in combat psychiatry, but I've also written two books since then talking about trauma. Because I worked after my most recent experience working for the VA as an outpatient psychotherapist for 5 years, and so I've done a lot of exposure to doing PTSD treatment as well as being in therapy myself on and off for the last 40 years.
And what did you find of the soldiers, the observations you had?
Good, thank you. And my experience overall is that there's two major factors that play into people developing. Everybody who goes into combat on whatever level or combat zone is exposed to trauma, severe trauma, and many people develop post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, the extent and severity of that PTSD will be related to a couple of factors, one of which is how well supported is that person in their unit and by their brothers and the people that are around them. Well, I have to say sisters now, too, of course, because I had the opportunity to work with the first woman who was wounded in combat in Iraq.
Wow. What does that mean, supported? What does that mean? What shows up as support for a veteran in the line of fire?
Well, the only person you really know, you have to know that the people around you have your back.
Yep.
That's the bottom line.
Yep.
And if you somehow fall afoul of the members of your unit, you're in serious trouble.
Uh-huh.
I mean, these are the people that are, you know, protecting you. And I think that ultimately something that gets overplayed, and I don't mean to be too emphatic about this, but is the idea that we're fighting for God and country and mom and apple pie. And you know, I think that's part of the big hype around pumping up combat as a glorious experience.
Well, we'll get to that.
Saying this is a backdrop to the idea that, you know, what you're really fighting for is the people around you to keep them safe, because they're working at keeping you safe.
Right, right.
And that's the real bottom line. So yeah, that's what I mean by support. You know, there's a bond that forms.
Yes, yes.
And it's that bond that carries you.
Right, exactly.
You know, and if you don't have that bond, then you know you're in trouble.
So, all right. So, how does PTSD show up most often?
Oh my! Well, I can give it to you symptomologically. You know,
yeah, just
rage,
just
sleep
a quick
disturbance, depression, erratic job performance, erratic relationships, drugs and alcohol. Flashbacks, nightmares, sleep, night terrors, you know, I mean, a lot of that may sound like symptomatology, but it's all based in real stuff.
And you're speaking of that not only an educated person, but also a person who's had some of those experiences yourself.
Oh, most certainly, yeah. I, you know, without getting into too much of the history, I'm 100%, you know, VA disabled PTSD vet myself.
What does that mean, 100% disabled?
Oh, that by the VA standards, that I'm I have been and am significantly disturbed enough by my experiences of war that I was unable to, significantly unable to function in a relatively normal fashion, keep a job, blah blah blah, to the extent where I was, you know, considered to be disabled, unabled.
So it's 5:51. I'm Rick C. sitting here with Jimmy Trujillo, and this is Out of the Box at KKCR. We're talking to Stefan, and who's a veteran, lives on Maui, and we're talking about some of his experience and his overview for the as a kind of a highlight, a prelude to the Memorial Day weekend coming up for us, and some thoughts we might have. We're going to open up the phone lines about a quarter of, if you have some calls, and that will be calls for my guest or for Ritika, who's still sitting here, and Jimmy, and we'll want to have a pretty much open call in about that point. But Stefan, while I have you particularly, mm-hmm. let's talk a little bit about honoring. Let's talk about honoring of vets. And so, you know, I remember in the 70s, vets coming home, and as a layperson, I had an idea, you know,
gosh, you know, all those guys who went over and killed all those people, and you know, there was you guys didn't get a very good homecoming, and that's been written about, movies done about, things like that, that have educated many of us in society, I think, about some of the problems and some of the misplaced kind of anger that citizens had at that time. But what does it mean to you as a man and to other veterans about being honored?
It is probably in many ways the number one most important thing. To this day, and I meet vets every single week, and I don't care whether, you know, they're long hair, short hair, straight, you know, grizzled, homeless. You know, I meet vets every single week, and I walk up to them, and I shake hands with them. I say, welcome home, brother, or welcome home, sister, because I've met, you know, women vets, too,
right.
Because it is, you never get enough welcome home, and, you know, and it's generally on many levels, despite, you know, like, say, the early Iraqi and Afghani vets, and I think they, you know, they deserve getting heaven parades. But the fact that they were given parades doesn't mean that they're actually being welcomed.
Sure.
The parade is kind of a spectacle, you know, and people are afraid of vets.
So let's get it briefly. This is a whole talk show in itself, but
sure.
I just want to spend a few minutes talking about the VA and talking about the support. So does the VA not give you that kind of support? Do Veterans Administration not support veterans in the way that they could and should? What's your experience?
Wow, you've got some big footballs there.
Yeah, well, you know, there we go.
So I have two answers to that. One, on the one hand, you know, the VA is doing the best it can within the constraints that are applied. On the other hand, as you know, we've seen through a lot of recent public scandals, you know, many of the Veterans Administration's hospitals have been operating very dysfunctionally for many, many years, primarily because really enough money is not given to them to operate at top level, because in some levels vets are expendable. You know, so you go to combat and blah blah blah, maybe you lose a leg or an arm, or you have PTSD, and so when you come home, the thing that they want, the VA wants the most on some levels, is to see that you look like you're getting treatment. You look like you're getting care.
Yeah, but you got 100%, disabled. Isn't that easy to do for a lot of people?
Oh, my God. No, it's very difficult. I work with vets who have lesser percentage ratings and help them get their 100% if, you know, if they're going to be qualified.
Or whatever percent. We do have a call. I know what Jimmy wants to take it. Jimmy, is that a call about the veterans?
Yeah, so Stefan, if you don't mind, we have a caller who'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
All right, caller, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, do you have a question for our guest, Stefan?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay, great. Stefan, thank you so much for all you did for our country. And I agree that Memorial Day should not be a big celebration of drinking beer and sitting on the beach. And I've recently lost quite a few friends from either Vietnam or World War II. And I'm on Kauai, and I'm trying to find out where exactly they're buried. How do I find out so I could bring flowers?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm having difficulty hearing you. Could you repeat your question?
No, Stefan, let me just ask. She's asking
how
she can find where veterans are buried.
Oh. Wow. There is a register through the VA. I don't know exactly where, but I know there is a registry for any vet that's buried in a veterans hospital, veterans cemetery, or if they were buried privately, I wouldn't know exactly how to track that down, but I know that there is a registry for every vet that's buried in a veterans cemetery or in a veterans facility. And you can
the
place I would start is go to the vet center or go check out the VA, and they'll be able to help you with that. I wouldn't really know just offhand where to send you, though.
Here, I just went on the Internet, and I found a website called Nationwide Gravesite Locator.
There we go.
And it's part of the United States Veterans Affairs Department.
Yeah,
so
there we go.
I just put in a veterans burial location. And I found that, again, it's Department of U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and it's the a nationwide gravesite locator. Just type in names and things like that.
Oh,
I hope that will call
you.
Caller, thank you so much for your question.
Good job,
right, because actually three of these people never admitted they had PTSD and never went to the Veterans Hospital,
yes.
And one of which I was his mate in. And let me tell you, I know that what the problem was, and it wasn't fun.
I'm sure.
No, I would suggest that,
myself,
if you had some official status, that you might want to go to the VA yourself and request services.
Is that something a spouse can do?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, I wasn't married.
You know, and especially a spouse. Well, again, if he didn't admit his PTSD, he probably didn't have a rating. So.
But she's saying they weren't formally married.
Well, then the vet center. I'm not sure if they're where it is in Kauai, but there has to be a vet center.
There is.
These are a lot of female vets, and there are a lot of female counselors for vets who work with mates and wives of vets.
Okay. Well, we're gonna ask for any veteran to call at right after the show at 6 o'clock. And give me a contact number, and if you want to call back, then we'll try and hook you up with someone who can help you. Thank you so much for calling Out of the Box.
Okay, one other thing is, I want to just make a little comment that any veteran is listening. It's not embarrassing to go and admit your problem, because if I myself do psych nursing, and so many people, even from World War II, my neighbor, he never would talk about it.
Mm.
And, you know, talking about it really helps.
Yeah.
And if any veteran is listening, just please, please go to the vet center. And on Kauai, they're getting really good about giving help.
You know what, Paul, you're really bringing to mind that, you know, what I'd thought about is before when I was scheduling this part of the program, this is really a two-hour show. So I'd like to encourage other people to myself or whoever it is to have a longer discussion. I'm sorry we can't really.
No.
You brought some very excellent points to the table here, and I'm very grateful for your call.
Yes, and I really thank you all.
Yeah, thank
every veteran
thank
on this island.
Thank you for
and
participating.
Anyone who's had a loss.
Aloha.
And that's what Memorial Day means to me.
Thank you so much.
You know, so she made a really good point. You know, I mean, it is the sense of isolation that develops. It's one of the biggest pieces. And so that somehow reconnecting, you know, like in ancient warrior societies, when warriors came back from battle, they were kept apart from the community for a period of time in order that they could regain and treated to healing ceremonies and sweat lodges and in order that they could regain their equanimity and become a part of the community again without contaminating the community.
Now that's historically that used to happen?
Yes.
Okay. So now I want to talk a little bit about isolation and connection and what is the relationship of that? I hear about that.
Okay. So the whole idea, okay, so let's say you're in a combat unit and you are connected. You feel this sense of connection with the guys in your unit. You work together. You risk your lives together. You experience all these often horrendous experiences. You have a sense of connection and that sense of trust. And then what happens is, and I saw it happen in Vietnam. I knew guys who were pulled out of the field in their uniform, stuck on a helicopter, taken to Benoit Airport, and they were home within 24 hours of having been in the field.
Right.
They're going, oh, my God, what the hell am I doing here? Because all of a sudden you're put in a situation where you are completely alone, completely without support, where you have no parameters of trust, where you have no sense of connection.
Right.
And that's one of the things that really fosters PTSD is that sense of isolation, that I'm alone, I have no one to trust, I have no one to turn to, no one hears me, no one has the same experience.
All right, so how do you get past that? What are your tools?
Oh, good. Well, you know, I've, through the year, of course, as I say, I've been in psychotherapy, you know, on and off practically since I got home.
How have you connected with other men?
I'm sorry?
How have you connected with other men?
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I've been in vets groups, and one of my big connections in more recent years has been the Mankind Project. I sit regularly in a Mankind Project men's group every week. I attend events. In fact, this past weekend, staffed a Mankind Project weekend, initiation weekend, because I have not experienced the kind of connection with other men since Vietnam, until I found the Mankind Project, and it has helped me enormously.
In what way?
I have a sense of trust. I have a sense that no one's going to shame me, even if people freak out about some of my stories and stuff, but it's a safe place. That's the biggest piece, is having a safe place. And it's the one thing that, you know, every vet needs. Excuse me.
And I know you're getting over the flu, so I thank you that you're here today.
And so one thing, well, everyone really needs is a safe place where you feel like you're, you know, no one's going to harm you. You can relax. That's why they called it rest and relaxation. You were supposed to be in a place where, you know, you were not in danger and you could actually rest and recuperate. And it, to me, it's one of the biggest pieces of my long-term recovery, is that, you know, I'm finally learning to rest. And it wasn't, you know, and it's been a long, long process. And
rest as in unstress?
Yes, and de-stress. Yes,
de-stress, yes. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit, just briefly, about the culture that we have that invites men and women to become part of the service. You know, this is a whole other show in itself, but let's just see if we can bat this around.
I really wish we could talk for about 2 hours.
I do, too, and we will try to maybe arrange that another time.
I would love that. That so much material I'd love to share with you.
Yeah, let's just briefly, you know, what's your overview? I mean, did you enlist or were you drafted?
Well, my father was a World War II vet, and he had PTSD from World War II, and as soon as I got my draft notice, he just was pounding me day and night, don't go in the infantry, don't go in the infantry, don't go in the infantry. I was like, Jesus. You know, and partly just to get him off my back, I went ahead and signed up, and I enlisted to go into the medical field because I thought, okay, that's, you know, it's, that'll just get him off my, I really basically did it to get him off my back. So, and naively, I didn't specify a particular job, you know.
How was it when you got there in comparison to what they told you?
Got to
Vietnam.
Oh, my. Oh, God, completely, completely different.
In what way?
Oh, my God. 10 minutes after I was on the ground, I knew I'd been lied to. You know, the hype was always, you know, we're helping the Vietnamese people, and they have all this cooperation, and everybody loves us, and blah, blah, blah. We're doing all these heroic things. And I'm not saying that we didn't do heroic things. I knew so many guys that, you know, no one will ever know about who were in my heart truly heroes, man, who did beautiful, wonderful things, and you know, and I guess I have to admit, on occasion, I did too. But we, in many ways, were restricted. And here's the big split between, you know, the politicians and the high command and the guy in the field, because, you know, in many ways, there are many unwritten designations that if you're, say, a field grade officer and you want to make rank, you have to have a combat tour. And to have a combat tour be successful, you had to have letters of recommendation from those higher up than you. In order to do that, you had to meet command decisions. And many times it was like, for example, the movie Hamburger Hill. I was there. Not in Hamburger Hill, but I was there when it happened.
Sure.
And briefly in that story, the same commander was ordered by his commander, who was ordered by his commander, to at any cost take this hill. And every time they took it, they were ordered to stand down and abandon it. Of course, the NVA came back in, took it again. So six different times.
Wow.
they were ordered to take this hill because it looked good for the commander.
Stefan, we need to start wrapping this up. I want to just ask you briefly in closing, what is your observation of the military and veterans, the environment for veterans today as opposed to when you were in Vietnam? Is it better? I mean, we have an all-volunteer army now. And obviously, you know, we're a big country. We have interests around the world. We need a military. So is it better today?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. You know, I mean, I hear these stories about active serving military guys getting food stamps because they're not being provided with enough money to care for their families, or the wife having to work half-time or full-time just to make their needs be met. And these are guys who are in active duty service.
Right.
And to me, that's just not right. If we're going to have, you know, an all-volunteer army, then we need to take care of our guys, man. That's always, to me, has always been where I come from. And, you know, you take care of your own.
Well, there seems to be a separation between what politicians say and politicians do.
Oh, giant.
You know?
Because politics is the politics of the spectacle. People are only wanting to look at what they can see or how things seem to be.
So,
nobody's really investigating or caring to look at beneath the surface to find out what's really going on.
So for our listeners out there who may know a vet or may see a man that they believe is a vet, this weekend, if no other time, this weekend, and when we're carrying forth and having memories about people who have passed, whether we knew them or not, whether we are we're kind of have some idea, you've give us an outline, just a sketch of some of the trauma that veterans have been through. Can you tell us just a little bit, what would you say? What would you say that a lay person out there could say to a veteran or a man?
Well, the easiest and sweetest thing you can say is welcome home.
Welcome home, yeah. Thank you for your service. Does that help?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Great.
You know, and if I may briefly say, I have just so much material I'd like to share. I have a couple of books coming out this year. One's called The Crucible of Shame, and the other is called Retirement Blues. And Crucible of Shame deals with the shame-based orientation that underlies the permanent war economy. And Retirement Blues talks about, you know, depression and isolation and disillusionment after retiring from a system of work and consumption, and how we might use our retirement years as a spiritual growth platform. So I'm only mentioning that in context of wanting to say that, you know, there's so much material here, and I've spent most of my life, especially the last 45 years since I've been home, investigating these topics and digging beneath the surface and all in trying to heal myself, because I knew that I was crazy.
Stefan,
you know, I mean, it's not a very clinical term, but I knew that my life was not working.
Thank you so much for your time.
I spent the last 45 years trying to get a handle on what really did happen. How do I frame this? You know, what led to this? And I think that in many ways, you know, we live in a traumatogenic society. Society creates, our society as it's currently constituted, creates trauma because it works, it does not talk about the collective need. It talks about individual needs and keeps people isolated from each other. Like your other guest was talking about, well, GMOs are here to stay. Well, who said that? You know, we didn't choose that. It's being imposed upon us. We're being told what reality is. We're not having an opportunity to participate in creating that reality.
Stefan, I hope to have you participate here on Out of the Box another time here on KKCR. You're always welcome on Kauai Community Radio. You have given us a window into the lives of hundreds of thousands of veterans who've served this country, and I thank you for that. I honor you for your service, and I want to close with saying welcome home, Stefan.
Thank you, brother. And if anybody calls in who you know seems to you to be someone who might legitimately benefit from talking to me, please, you know, give them my phone number.
You give it to them.
I don't want to put
Oh, that's fine. If somebody calls, I'll do that. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And
aloha nui loa, brother.
All right. Same to you. Aloha.
Laser Bear Productions presents Dave Mason's Traffic Jam. One night only on Friday, June 12th at the Kauai Community College Performing Arts Center. Doors open at 6:30. Show starts at 7:30. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer and co-founder of the legendary band Traffic, Dave Mason, performing with his band all the hits including Dear Mr. Fantasy, Feeling All Right, and We Just Disagree. A journey back to the greatest days of rock with Dave Mason's sight and sound experience. Traffic Jam. Information, tickets, and Golden Circle at 808-896-4845 or at laserbear.com. LAZARBEAR.com.
One Night Only on Kauai, Dove presents An Evening with Trevor Hall. Trevor Hall's music is an eclectic mix of acoustic rock, reggae, and Sanskrit chanting, echoes with the names and teachings of divinities while maintaining an incredibly refreshing universal message. Thursday, May 28th, Church of the Pacific. Doors open at 7 p.m., show starts at 8 p.m., tickets online at dovepresents.com. More information at 808-635-5556. Trevor Hall, May 28th on Kauai.
Here we go, and we got another phone call. There we go. Aloha, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, aloha, guys. It's Forrest from the Big Island and
aloha,
a Forrest. Veteran.
Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Hey,
I know Brother Stefan and I just spent this last weekend in a place where men really could share some of this kind of deeper stuff. And as a Vietnam veteran, I realized 40 years have gone by, and one of the most healing things, great question, Rick, you presented, which is, how does somebody even relate to somebody?
Hey, Forrest, let me focus you on we got about 3 minutes.
That's
Here's
perfect.
The question I really want to ask you, because I've heard you say this before, and I think it's very interesting. What is the Veterans Journey Home Project?
Yeah, it's something Stefan and I both shared. I was amazed when some folks who were both veterans and civilians who supported this weekend event, when I walked in that room, it's a suggestion of some good friends, I was bowled over by the honoring, the welcoming home energy of honoring this story. They didn't even know my story, but it hit me so strongly. And this program is going across the country. It's a weekend event, again, staffed by both veterans and civilians. It's a gorgeous program. No veteran is turned away. There's no cost to the veteran.
What's the program?
It's a program goes through a chance to talk about what happened to you, to people who you can trust and have some experience about that. I think if anything else, it's an honoring experience to say your suffering or the thing that you went through is not lost on us, and it's hugely healing. I was struck greatly by it, and I actually rediscovered my own pride in having served.
Is this a program, the Veterans Journey Home, is that something that's put on by the Veterans Administration or funded by them?
It's not. Actually, no. And what's interesting is that they seek private funding. It's one of a couple of programs. I'm most familiar with Vets Journey Home, and they have a website, Vets Journey Home, started by a guy who was a Vietnam brother. And they independently fund. They do not charge the veteran for going through. And I'm so impressed at the integrity of it, Rick.
How would someone find that program if they want to participate?
You know, I'll look online quickly, too. But I think it's vetsjourneyhome.org.
Okay.
And I'll confirm that. But I think the key is that's it, vetsjourneyhome.org. And there'd be a schedule of where these events will happen. Read the testimonials. See some of the photographs that touch me immediately. They're showing guys in Afghanistan, Iraq, and reaches back to guys in any other war event they were in.
There we go. Forrest, we have a caller who wants to join the conversation. But before we go there, I have been hearing a lot about men's groups and men veterans in this modern era. In the modern army, we have a lot of women. Is there also services and groups that meet and also address some of the issues that women veterans are facing today?
I'm so glad you mentioned it, because in my Vets Journey Home weekend, there were two young women that were serving in the Navy, and all the kind of things you can imagine where a male-dominated service would tend to bring unwanted attention to these women, and some of the things as to can they rise in responsibility. All that stuff is on the table, and Vets Journey Home was an extremely good setting for them to be honored as well.
Well, thank you. I got a phone call, a veteran who is joining the conversation. Caller, you're on the air.
Thank you for it.
Hey, thank you very much.
Hey, before you jump in there, vetsjourneyhome.org is the website.
That's it.
Okay?
That's the one.
Go ahead, caller. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I want to thank Stefan and all the other veterans for their incredible sacrifice, especially since we've been lied to so much. But and I also want to tell people that for veterans here on Kauai, there is a excellent some help for PTSD and other kind of other problems, similar type problems, at the Veterans Center, which is down right near Macy's, right across from Macy's. Macy's building down in Lihue. And there is a phone number I can give you for a clinical psychologist who has helped me tremendously with some PTSD issues that I have.
Great.
And his name is Dr. Hirani, H-I-R-A-N-I. And the telephone number is 246-1163. And he's a really great listener and a very supportive person. And I would recommend, and this program, I believe, just started recently there at the Veterans Center down there at the where the clinic is down there. If I got a minute, I want to tell you really quick that way that I've been able to deal with my PTSD since Vietnam times is one of the things I do is I belong to the Kauai Alliance for Peace and Social Justice. And what we do is once a year we go to the College and Career Fair, which is held here on the island, and all the high school kids on the island go through there, and we talk to them. We talk to them about options to joining the military in the first place, and you know, try to help them to see that they don't have to go in the military just because their uncle and their father did, and you know, and everybody's expecting them to do that. They can serve their country in other ways. That's
great
one
point.
Way. And then great another
point.
Way is that we are sponsoring Colonel Ann Wright, who is one of the most amazing people, a great speaker. She's a very well, highly decorated female. She was a colonel in the Army, and she quit as a response to the 2003 entrance into the Iraq War. She just said, no, this is not right. And she's been an activist ever since. And I believe that women are going to have to step up to lead us from not going into World War III, because men are the ones that have done all this damage over all these hundreds and thousands of years. It's testosterone, it's the power and the glory and the, you know, the patriot, the super patriotism and all that stuff. And right now we've been in wars for 12 years since 2003, and it's getting worse by the day, and our people are dying, and we're killing people, and we're creating terrorism by the minute.
I am a
patriot, and I believe we have to tell the truth.
Fred, we have to close.
Okay.
We have to close. So
thank you for your time.
Again, Dr. Hirani's number is 246-1163.